Chapter 31. Reluctant Upskilling. At the beginning of 1969, I returned to Sydney after spending a most interesting 6 weeks in Nairobi, with my father and his second wife, Alison. Upon my return, I faced the challenge of finding a place to live, because the hostel for young women at Kirribilli was no longer an option. I'd thoroughly enjoyed the facilities there, but 3 years was the maximum length of stay, the time it would usually take to complete most tertiary qualifications. But the truth be told, as a headstrong 20-year-old, I'd had more than enough of living with the regulations and curfews imposed. My adopted aunt, Helen Klausner, came to the rescue, offering me a downstairs room in her extraordinary modernist house at Hunters Hill. Aunt Helen was an early childhood specialist. She owned and ran Fina School Requisites, in Balmain, selling quality educational needs for kindergarten and lower primary school children. She visited schools all over Sydney, in her pale blue VW Combi, filled to overflowing with inspiring children's books, art materials, and imaginative wooden puzzles. Aunt Helen's retail manager, newly married Jan Sims, and her husband Greg, were already living in her house, and when asked, they were more than happy to have another person join them to share the rent. I had transport, my mother's chocolate brown and white sports car. This was a good thing, as Helen's house was off the beaten track, with public transport services erratic, particularly at weekends. Now I'd a place to live, I could begin full-time study at the Metropolitan Business College, the MBC, where I'd learn shorthand, typing and bookkeeping. At the outset, I was optimistic. My father had decided that secretarial training would be a more reliable meal ticket than my recently completed 3 years of full-time art school study. Once I'd recovered from the shock, I felt he'd given me the opportunity to gain an additional skill set that would complement my art training. But my optimism was short-lived. The MBC building was in the city, not far from Circular Quay. As city parking was expensive, I took a bus, and then a ferry to the quay, Monday through Friday, to attend classes. By way of an introduction, I've included a priceless quote from MBC's 1918 promotional blurb. But, by the time I arrived some 50 years later, the organization had become a shadow of its former self.
What you get at the MBC: thorough training, under the close personal supervision of the principals. Real individual teaching and personal attention to your special requirements, only possible where an institution is adequately staffed. Classes limited. Staff of 4 teachers. High quality teaching. Only a big institution like the MBC can afford to pay the salaries asked by really good teachers, and to install the complete teaching equipment demanded by modern requirements. Good positions, the natural result of good teaching, under scientific up-to-date methods. Courtesy, discipline, tone, an atmosphere of earnest, purposeful endeavor. The stimulus of success.
Quite a wrap. But the facilities at MBC could only be described as Dickensian. It was as though the clock stopped just after World War II. The numerous dark wood-paneled classrooms held a squeeze of well-worn wooden desks and chairs for shorthand and bookkeeping lessons. The typing room housed numerous antiquated typewriters, set out on small desks in tight rows, and smelt of old oil and metal. Of all the new skills I was to master, shorthand proved to be the most difficult. I found it impossible to memorize the seemingly endless pages of squiggles that represented whole words. Bookkeeping was equally difficult, and typing was tricky, on the heavy old typewriters from another age. I was accustomed to my mother's Olivetti portable typewriter, that only required a light touch instead of a heavy thump, for each letter. My fingers didn't perform well, and my typing tests were testament to my total inability to master this skill. Overall, things weren't looking too good at MBC, and, as my feelings of inadequacy grew, I was forced to ask myself the inevitable question. How could I be so stupid? I felt like a square peg in a round hole. I stuck it out for about 4 months, becoming more and more dispirited by the day. What to do? From somewhere, I heard that the newly formed National Parks and Wildlife Service was looking for a part-time graphic designer. I applied for the job and got it. At the start, I was able to juggle my secretarial studies with the parks and wildlife work. But, as time went on, I found the parks and wildlife work was much more interesting, offering a wide variety of jobs, from graphics to leaflet mock-ups and visitor center displays. As a result, I spent more and more time with the parks and wildlife team, and less at MBC. These seismic changes in my life placed me on the horns of a dilemma. How could I tell my father I was unable to master the rudiments of a basic secretarial training, and, instead had found a much more exciting art-related job, with a newly formed government department? I decided not to tell him. A decision that would have lasting ramifications. Instead of using public transport, I now drove the swank Karmann gear from Hunters Hill to the parks and wildlife offices in the city, because the building had basement parking. The parking attendant, possibly reveling in the car's rarity, as it was one of only four in Australia, let me park there for very little. Things were falling into place, but not in the way I'd expected, and my spirits lifted. I loved my work with parks and wildlife, and they liked the work I did. On the home front, even though we all enjoyed living at Hunters Hill, the distances to our various workplaces was becoming bothersome. We decided an inner city rental would be more convenient for us all. With Aunt Helen's blessing, Jan began the search for a suitable house. Quite quickly she found a small, tumble-down semi-detached weatherboard cottage in Birchgrove. It was perfect for us all. We moved in, and immediately began scrubbing and painting and decorating, to make the most of the tiny spaces. Upstairs there was a dormer-windowed bedroom, downstairs a second bedroom and a living room, a kitchen, a lean-to laundry, and a small bathroom and loo. All rooms were basic but functional. The backyard was particularly useful, ideal for Jan and I to produce lengths of batik fabric for an exclusive dress shop in upmarket Double Bay, happy to take as much as we could produce. It's worth mentioning here that in my late teens, male companionship was varied and interesting. In no particular order, I dated a Fiat 124S, a Porsche Carrera 911, a Triumph Spitfire, an MGB, and a Fiat 500, but for one reason or another the possibility of a longer-term relationship with any one of the vehicle's owners fizzled out. Since leaving home at 15, I'd experienced group living in two places. Firstly, at a Queensland boarding school, followed by the YWCA hostel, both all-girl institutions, and more recently I'd shared digs with my adopted aunt and a newly married couple. But I felt it was now time for me to consider a committed relationship of my own, and this would happen sooner than I could ever have imagined. One day I noticed a nice young man coming and going from the once grand double-fronted Victorian brick cottage on the other side of the street. Little did I know at the time that this young man was to be my first live-in relationship. In those days, it was called living in sin, and I was up for it. On reflection. Metropolitan Business College. Being hardly numerate, I found bookkeeping a mystery. Since then, I've realized I learn best with an application rather than a hypothetical, and it wasn't until I had my own business and needed to track finances that I figured it out. Before long, I became sufficiently proficient to do just that. But that's another story. My father. I didn't know how to tell my father that I was no longer attending classes at MBC. I considered myself a failure, and was ashamed to admit I was unable to master the secretarial skills taught there. Skills other young women mastered with ease. In my father's eyes, I had no artistic talent, and now this MBC disaster. I remained mystified by my father's pronouncement that I wasn't talented or gifted, after completing 3 years full-time study at the National Art School. I wondered how he knew, as he'd seen none of my student artwork. Still smarting from this perceived injustice, I found it well nigh impossible to write to him confessing that I was playing hooky from MBC, and had instead stumbled into a fabulous job that paid well, and utilized all aspects of my graphic design training. Relationship modeling. My dysfunctional family life was a hotbed of hostility. As a result, my parents were unable to provide role modeling of a mutually supportive relationship for my brother and I. With no guidelines to follow, my interactions with men to this point had been confusing, because I was unable to recognize genuine affection. By observing the mechanics of my housemate's relationship, I slowly gained the confidence I needed to seriously consider the possibility of establishing a committed relationship with a man. I was now poised and ready to take the next step. Charlie. Facts. The National Parks and Wildlife Service in Australia. The service was established in 1967. It was an amalgamation of the Fauna Protection Panel and the Parks and Reserves branch of the New South Wales Lands Department. The Lands Minister also established a charity, the Foundation for National Parks and Wildlife, to assist the service in raising funds for conservation. Foundation for National Parks and Wildlife. Whilst I was working for Parks and Wildlife, I was asked to produce a number of drawings of a grass tree and flower for the foundation's logo, and one of my drawings was selected. I note that my original drawing has since been replaced by a koala.